he's used his student ID to access the gym and the library in the past few days. No flight records and no charges on his cards that would indicate travel. What about Crane? Max shook her head. I don't have much of an electronic trail for him. It doesn't seem likely that he'd be able to slip away from his family and hurt someone while they're the subject of so much media attention, though, right? Unlikely, but not impossible. I'll check in with the DeWalts tomorrow. I should do that anyway. She put her hands over her eyes for a moment. A small headache was forming over her temples. What should we do next? Max's voice was quiet, almost tentative. The only thing we can do. Veronica drew her hands away from her eyes. Max sat very still in front of her, waiting. We keep going over the evidence, and we hope like hell that sooner or later, some part of it makes sense. Chapter 17. You know what I definitely don't miss about New York? Veronica swayed slightly in the hammock strung between two stolid oaks in Keith's backyard, a finger stuck between the pages where she'd been leafing through Aurora Scott's diary. It was just after dinner, and the last of the day's sun filtered gently through the leaves. Keith looked up at her from where he was crouched, yanking weeds from around the agapanthus. Their dirty dishes and the remainder of their lasagna sat on the little wooden table on the patio. They'd come out to enjoy the evening while they ate, a well-earned break. "I've heard the sewer alligators are very intimidating," he said, wiping beads of sweat from his brow. She leaned back in the canvas of the hammock, enjoying the sense of being supported. "I don't miss crummy little apartments without yards or gardens or windows that open. I definitely don't miss that." It was her favorite part of Keith's house, the yard. When she'd been in high school, after the recall election, in which they'd lost everything, they'd made their home in an apartment, less crummy and less little than anywhere she'd lived in Manhattan, but definitely not anyone's picture of the good life. It had been comfortable, though, and it had been theirs, back when it was the two of them against the world. And at least there'd been a courtyard with a pool where she could sit and get some air. But it was a true luxury to be able to sit in a little patch of garden while the light faded, to take charge of the weeds in the garden, to swing gently between oaks older than she was.
"Well, yeah? You might miss it more after cutting the grass every weekend for a few months."
He glanced up at her from where he knelt, his mouth twisted wryly.
I was thinking about adopting more of a supervisory position when it came to yard work, but I'll bring you lemonade between mowings."
He tugged a tough, sinewy weed from the soil. Its roots were dense and gnarled.
"What's that you're reading?"
She held up the little book. "Aurora's diary. Last entry is a little over a year ago, so it might not be the most up-to-date information, but it's somewhere to start." The diary was actually a sketchbook, filled with line after line of wide, looping handwriting in multiple colors of ink. Sketches and doodles showed up throughout in pencil, a cartoon Frankenstein's monster shambling his way across the page, a perfectly shaded picture of a flower in a vase, an abstract doodle illuminating the margins. Aurora was a good artist. Sometimes the text ran in straightforward lines, but sometimes she'd turn the diary sideways or wrote in weird curlicues that spiraled around her drawings. "Can't stand another day around the dead-eyed zombie hordes. Every time Mrs. Nelson mispronounces the word chlamydia in health class, an angel gets its wings. Or maybe it just gets chlamydia. Got a drug and alcohol lecture today from the arch-hypocrite himself. Does AA make you retarded, or did he kill all his fucking brain cells before that?" Aurora wasn't always so hostile. Almost every page had a reference, sometimes punctuated by hearts or smiley faces, to Barkley, who Veronica gathered was the family dog, and a full page of the journal was devoted to a sketch of Hunter, looking sober and skeptical, captioned with the words, "The Boss." But the image of Aurora Scott that started to emerge somewhere between the lines was prickly and impatient. She was smart, creative, petulant, bored.
Unlike Haley DeWalt, she didn't seem eager to please anyone but herself.
So how was your mom today?
Veronica looked upward through the filigree of leaves. That morning, seeing Leanne on the small screen in the kitchen, neither of them had even said her name out loud. Veronica had watched the press conference open-mouthed, lost in her own shocked horror, and it wasn't until the screen went back to Trish Turley that she thought to wonder what Keith was feeling. But there'd been no time to discuss it. Petra Landros had called, and she'd had to hurry to get dressed and out the door. When she'd gotten home, Keith had dinner on the table, glasses of wine at the ready. They'd eaten in an almost polite silence. She had the feeling he was waiting for her to talk about it. She'd opened her mouth to speak once or twice and changed her mind. Maybe it was just habit that made everything so difficult. She and Keith talked about almost everything, but Leanne was one of the few topics they'd always avoided. Now she propped herself up on her elbow to look at him. Devastated. She's terrified. Keith nodded, not looking up. He jabbed a gardening fork into the tender earth, trying to pry out the deep and stringy roots of another weed. She watched him for a moment before going on. But besides that, she seems like she's doing well. She paused for a moment. She has another kid. A little boy. He nodded. I saw that in one of the articles. He paused. Did you meet him?
Yeah. He's cute.
She just had to avoid saying the word brother and she'd be able to keep it together. And Tanner's nice enough. I mean, he's a little sketchy. Mac turned up some old check-forging charges from back before he married Mom, and he does that bullshitty self-mythologizing thing addicts always seem to do, but it seems like he really does care about her. Since they've been together, he's been on the straight and narrow.
I'm happy for them, Keith said simply. I mean, not about what they're going through, obviously, but I'm happy they found each other.
She sat up in the hammock and swung her legs down.
What about you?
Me?
Yes, you. It's been a while. When are you going to get back on the horse?
Keith grimaced. I don't know if you've noticed, honey, but I've currently got my hands full recovering from a catastrophic injury or two. I'm not sure I could handle dating.
Come on, ladies love vulnerability. You've just got to limp on out there and be yourself.
Why, you know any MILFs in the market for a cripple?
He waggled his brows.
Oh my God, please never say MILF again as long as I live.
Her laughter was interrupted by the sound of her cell phone trilling in her pocket. She stood up out of the hammock and pulled it out.
Veronica Mars.
For a minute, all she heard was background noise. Traffic, maybe, or the patter of a TV. Then there was a phlegmy cough.
I got this number off a flyer.
She froze, her senses going on alert. I'm listening.
I might have some information for you.
Another cough.
You should probably come on by. 20111 Meadowview Road.
I'll be there in 40 minutes.
She drove down the stretch of smoke shops, free clinics, and pay-by-the-hour motels that ran along Meadowview. The address landed her in front of a small square building, a bright yellow banner hanging across the front that read, We Buy Gold. A picture of a capering leprechaun was painted across one window. The iron bars over the glass made it look like he was in jail. There was a bell on the door that jingled as she entered. A smell of burnt coffee and heavy-duty cleaner stung her nostrils. Inside was a waiting area, with a small vinyl chair adjacent to an empty water cooler. There was a service window in the wall, filled with warped plexiglass like a bank teller station. To the left of that was a door with a sign that read, Employees Only. Hello? A blurry shape appeared on the other side of the glass. Then a small window shot open, filled by a sagging, doughy face with bloodshot eyes and wiry gray hair. Veronica unfolded a copy of her flyer from her purse.
You called me about the flyer?
His expression didn't change, but a little glint came into his eyes.
They were pale, watery blue, veined like a cracked marble.
Is there some kind of reward?
Depends on what you've got. She let her smile drop. If you give me a lead I can use, I have a crisp $100 bill with your name on it. Actually, it's more like 5 crumpled 20s, but it spends the same.
100 seems a little thin when there's a 10K reward for finding the girl.
Oh, does that mean you're going to bring her home? Veronica mimed, wiping her forehead. That is a relief, because I've been running all over town looking for information, but if you know where she is, that lets me off the hook.
Hey, I just want to make sure my information is appraised at its proper value.
He mournfully raised the straw of a big gulp to his lips and slurped loudly, his eyes tracking her every move. Veronica pressed her lips together. There might be other ways to get his information, but every second she stood here was another lost opportunity to find the girls.
Okay, I have 150 for you to tell me everything you know right now, and if I find Haley DeWalt, I'll come back and give you another 50.
He suckled his soda for a moment, slurping the dregs up from the bottom. Then he slammed the plexiglass window shut. For a moment, she thought that was it. She was dismissed. Then the door in the wall swung open. The face was a body now, slouching and slow, in a wrinkled khaki-colored shirt, the same miserable shade as the carpet and the walls. He beckoned for her to follow him to the back room. His workspace was cramped and cluttered, every surface covered with a hodgepodge of equipment, electronic probes and scanners, tweezers, scales, gauges. Small bins lined the shelves on the walls, dusty and full of odd parts. A broken watch lay in pieces across a counter. A small TV was perched precariously on the corner of his workstation, tuned to Fox News, the screen smeared with something greasy. The shopkeeper leaned down and pulled a small basket from a shelf below his workstation. A label on one end read 3/11. Inside, Veronica could see a jumble of plastic baggies, each containing something different, a gold link bracelet, an ugly old brooch, a few engagement rings. She wondered briefly if any of their owners had been her or her dad's clients.
"She's not wearing it in any of the pictures they're showing on the news," he muttered. "But I recognized it the second I saw that flyer. Never seen another one like it."
Veronica was about to ask him what he was talking about when he found what he was looking for. He ripped open the bag and poured a necklace out into one surprisingly fine-boned hand. It was a pendant, a tiny gold birdcage on a slender golden chain. Veronica stared at the necklace in his hand. For a moment, she didn't recognize what she was looking at. Then, all at once, she understood. She reached into her purse and pulled out one of her flyers. There it was, hanging from Haley's neck on the night she disappeared. It dangled into her cleavage, the cage hitting the curve of a breast.
"This came in 2 days after that girl disappeared."
"It's pretty," Veronica shrugged, playing it cool.
"Are you sure all the girls aren't wearing them? It's not being mass-produced for Urban Outfitters or anything. Birds are sort of in these days." "That's not mass-produced," he scoffed. "Whoever made it is a real craftsman. And look."
He opened the cage door on the tiny hinges.
"Her initials are engraved inside. I noticed them, but I didn't put it together until I saw your flyer."
Veronica held out her hand. The man reluctantly let the necklace slide into her palm. He was right. Even she could see it, and she wasn't exactly a jewelry expert. The birdcage was skillfully cast, the bars on the cage delicate and glittering. A cluster of 3 small diamonds was set in the roof. And there, inside, were the initials, HD.
"Most of the stuff I get, I sell for scrap. This, this is special. I was gonna try and resell it."
"Do you keep records on your clients? Who brought this in?" He set his drink down on the counter and shuffled painfully over to the TV. A small stack of VHS tapes sat next to it.
"It's lucky I saw your flyer when I did. I usually only keep them for a week and then tape over them."
He selected the tape that said Wednesday and pushed it into the built-in VCR. There were a few tense moments as he fast-forwarded through the day's tape,
It looked like he didn't get a lot of business until late evening, but by 9 p.m. the parade of despair commenced. Very young women with young children clinging to their legs, wobbly old men with unkempt beards, strung-out, bone-thin beings of indeterminate age. They filed in, one by one, the black-and-white cameras picking up their raw hope, and then their defeat when they realized how little time their treasures had bought them. Then, at 10:05, a white guy with a sprout of pale dreadlocks came in. The shopkeeper hit play.
"This is the guy," he said, pointing at the screen.
His fingernail was lined with grime, but his hands were otherwise clean.
"I've got his ID information on file, too. William Murphy, 24 years old. He signed the paperwork, Willie. Real twitchy kid. I assumed he was jonesing. Talked non-fucking-stop."
"What did he talk about?"
"Oh, he had a big long story about where he'd gotten it. His sister's best friend's cousin sent him to see what he could get for it, because she needed milk for her sick infant son or some crap like that. Basically, he didn't want me to think he'd stolen it."
Which, of course, you believed, because buying and reselling stolen goods is a crime. Veronica gave a tight smile. The man gestured as if to say, "Sure, whatever." She leaned closer to the screen, trying to get a glimpse of his face. Something about Willie Murphy was familiar to her. She'd seen him somewhere around town, or maybe he was just one of the handful of Trustafarians who came to Neptune for spring break. He was twitchy. There was no sound, but she could tell by the quick, bird-like movements of his hands that he was talking excitedly. He kept looking behind him, like he thought someone might be sneaking up on him. When he turned to leave, stuffing the bills into his wallet, he looked up for a split second, right at the camera. "There, can you rewind and pause it when he looks up?" The shopkeeper did, and that was when she recognized him. He'd been in the background in one of the pictures Haley's friends had given her, nursing a beer while Haley DeWalt fed Rico Gutierrez a strawberry. And he'd been at the party the night Aurora went missing. She'd seen him jumping into the pool. She turned away from the shopkeeper, pulling her phone out of her purse. As she dialed, she put the necklace into her wallet.
"Hey, you gonna buy that?"
the shopkeeper demanded. She snorted, covering the microphone to reply. "You mean the stolen necklace that you illegally purchased? I don't think so. This is evidence." She uncovered the microphone. "Hi, Mac, sorry about that. Yeah, I need you to run another background check for me and email me the results ASAP." "Sure," Mac answered. "What's the name?" "William Murphy." She paused. For a split second, she thought about telling Mac what she was planning to do, but then she remembered how Mac and Wallace had looked at her that night in Mac's apartment after they'd discovered just who owned the house on Manzanita. Well, what they didn't know wouldn't hurt them. And if she wanted to find Willie Murphy, she didn't have a choice. She was going to have to go back to the party. Chapter 18. The theme that night was simple. Bikinis. Only for girls, of course. The guys seemed to be perfectly happy in pop-collar polos and baggy jeans. But to get in with a pair of X chromosomes, you had to be showing some skin. Veronica moved slowly through the crush, a beach bag tucked under her arm like a life preserver. She didn't have a lot of time for sunbathing these days, and she was painfully aware of the fish belly white of her bared midriff. Still, she could feel eyes tracing the lines of her body beneath her pink string bikini, prying and eager. As she made her way through the house, she kept her eyes peeled for any sign of Willie Murphy's dark blonde dreadlocks. Mac's background check had yielded a portrait of a petty criminal, public intoxication, possession, disorderly conduct, trespassing. He'd been in and out of county lockup since he was 17 years old, the longest stay, a 6-month stint for possession with intent to sell. His last known address was a grimy efficiency down the street from the Camelot, but he'd been evicted in January. Since then, he'd had no known permanent address. She'd considered calling Lamb, handing her new evidence straight to him, but she'd decided against it. Lamb wouldn't want to bust the party. He'd just put Murphy's picture all over the news and give him a chance to run. No, the only way she'd get answers was to talk to him before he knew he was being hunted. Now she just had to find him. The house was packed with sweaty, bared bodies, faces leering from every dark corner she passed. Tonight's celebration was, if anything, more frenzied than the party she'd seen the night before. It was nearing the end of spring break for most of these kids, and they seemed determined to push through the exhaustion, as if holding still would bring an end to this magical pretend world where everything felt good and you didn't have to do anything you didn't want to. Clouds of smoke billowed up from the crowd. She caught a whiff of tobacco and the sticky sweet smell of pot and something else, acrid and chemical, like the air in a cheap salon. Meth. She'd encountered the smell once before, tracking down a deadbeat dad in Riverside, finding him in a garbage-strewn apartment with a pipe in his hand. She squeezed through the crowd, eyes sharp. A herd of beefy, shirtless boys stampeded past her in the hallway, chanting something she couldn't quite make out. In the kitchen, a game of strip poker was underway, and a smooth-chested boy had already lost his shirt. A girl in an electric blue bikini sat across his lap, wearing an incongruous silk necktie. In the music room, an elfin boy sat on a gilt coffee table, a friend helping him secure a length of tubing around his upper arm. Out on the patio, she took a deep breath of clean air. She made her way down the stairs to the lower level, where the pool roiled with activity. No sign anywhere of Willie or the Gutierrez cousins. She craned her neck to scan the pool and the jacuzzi, and for a moment forgot to watch where she was going. She walked right into someone. Ow! Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. The words died on her lips. Standing in front of her, in board shorts and a puka shell necklace, was Dick Casablancas. He did a double take.
Hey, Ronnie, he said. You know, this is not where I expected to bump into you.
The cluster of girls he'd been standing with eyed Veronica with interest. She stood frozen to the spot, hoping against all hope that he wouldn't say anything too stupid. She'd known Dick since high school. For a while, after her father's fall from grace, he'd been one of her tormentors. After she started dating Logan, who just happened to be Dick's best friend, he'd eased up, and over time they'd made a kind of peace, though she wasn't sure she'd call him her friend. He was rich and careless and had the emotional depth of a chunk of concrete. The only real goals that registered for him were surfing, drinking, and screwing. In other words, she really shouldn't have been so surprised to see him at a party run by the offspring of cartel kingpins a half mile down the beach from his own house.
Hi, she said in her clipped, bright, Amber the co-ed voice. Isn't this party amazing?
He gave her a confused, blank look.
Yeah? That's kind of why I'm shocked to see you here.
He turned back to his audience of bikini-clad girls.
We went to high school together. I guess you girls would have been in, like, fifth grade.
Crazy.
She glanced at the girls. A few of them stared daggers at her, territorial aggression alight in their eyes.
Anyway, Ronnie here's a private dick, he said loudly, gesturing at her.
He leaned toward one of the girls, chortling and nudging her with his elbow.
I'm a not-so-private dick, if you get what I'm saying.
The girls giggled as he thrust his pelvis at them. Veronica grabbed him by the arm and pulled him, staggering, a few feet away from the little entourage. She threw a big, shiny smile over her shoulder at the girls, then turned back to Dick.
Whoa. I know Logan's been gone for, like, weeks, but I can't go all the way with you, no matter how lonely you are.
He smirked affably.
Bros before hoes, you know what I'm saying? Handies only.
Shut up, she commanded. She kept a smile frozen on her face, her eyes darting over the patio. I'm here to work, Dick. His gaze moved up and down her body.
Nice uniform.
She punched him in the arm. From far away, it might have looked playful. Dick clutched his bicep, groaning.
Jeez, 00 psycho, what's your problem?
Listen, just keep your voice down, okay? They were walking back along the edge of the patio now. On their left, a set of stairs led down to the dark beach. The ocean glowed gently beyond it,
the tidal roar completely swallowed by the noise from the party. She rummaged in her straw beach bag and pulled out her phone. "I need your help. Have you seen this guy here tonight?" He glanced at the picture on her screen, frowning.
"That guy? Yeah, I've seen him. He's always hanging around Rico and Eduardo."
She blinked. "You know the Gutierrez cousins?"
"Yeah, kind of. I've played squash with Eduardo a couple times. He's a poor loser, so I stopped."
He shrugged.
"He's got a bad temper. Broke a $200 racket last time I beat him. But dude knows how to throw a party."
"And Willie Murphy is a friend of his?" Dick snorted.
"Friend? No, I think he's like an errand boy or something. He rounds up people for the parties and stuff."
She stood for a moment, her mind processing all this. What if Willie was working for the Gutierrez cousins? What if he'd gotten rid of Haley and Aurora on their orders? Then, trying to cash in another time on the crime, he'd taken Haley's necklace and sold it. Not exactly criminal mastermind behavior, but then again, Murphy wouldn't be the first guy to screw himself over that way. "Have you seen him here tonight?"
"Sure."
He pointed up toward the terrace.
"Right over there."
She looked up to see a scrawny form in oversized patchwork pants, his dark blonde dreadlocks bobbing around his shoulders as he walked through the doors into the house. She released Dick's arm. He rubbed it again, frowning. "Thanks, Dick. I gotta run." She walked a few quick steps away from him, then turned around. "And Dick?"
"Yeah?"
he frowned. "If anyone asks, my name is Amber." He blinked, then shrugged.
"Whatever you say, Ronz."
She turned and walked up the steps, as quickly as her heels and her bikini's precarious arrangement with her anatomy allowed. By the time she reached the door, he'd vanished into the house. She looked around the kitchen. The strip poker game had deteriorated. The boy who'd been shirtless just a few minutes ago, now in nothing but boxers and a single white sock. The girl in the necktie had a rancid-smelling cigar clamped between her teeth.
"Did you guys see a boy with dreadlocks come through here? Which way did he go?"
The girl gestured with the burning end of her cigar toward the hallway that led to the front of the house. Veronica pushed into the hall, into the depths of the crowd. In the front entryway, kids gyrated and screamed like the world was about to end, climbing on top of one another. She couldn't see anything at her height, but looking up, she caught sight of Willie Murphy heading upstairs. By the time she got to the second floor landing, he was disappearing through a pair of wide double doors at the end of the long hall. When she finally fought her way to the doors, they were locked. She pressed her lips together, glancing around. The hall was filled with people, and while none of them seemed to be paying attention to her, she didn't want anyone to suddenly look up and see her trying to get access to a locked room, especially not those guys, she thought, noticing that in the crowd there were a few granite-faced men with suspicious bulges beneath their armpits. More heavies, in case crowd control was needed. She staggered back downstairs with a ditzy, drunken grin on her face. She paused for a moment on the lowest stair, pretending to clutch the banister for balance. There would be only one shot to make this work, and it was a long one. She had to pick her target carefully. Then, before she could talk herself out of it, she plowed into a bull-necked guy in a University of Washington football jersey as hard as she could. The size discrepancy between them was vast, to say the least. Veronica barely came up to his armpit, but she threw her weight low in his center of gravity. He staggered forward a few steps, then turned to see who'd hit him. She could have sworn she saw steam coming from his nostrils. She'd always been able to summon a few thin crocodile tears. Now her lip trembled, and she'd pointed at another man, a big guy with a ponytail and a shirt that barely buttoned over his massive chest.
"That guy just threw me down," she whimpered.
The football player's eyes narrowed. He chivalrously helped her to her feet. Then he strode over to the other guy and started shouting in his face. She couldn't hear what they were saying over the sound of the music, but it was easy to piece together what was happening when the football player started to shove the other guy with sharp, taunting pushes. Ponytail didn't back down. His lip curled in a savage sneer. Then he swung a punch. It happened quickly. Everyone moved to the edges of the room, trying to get out of the way while still securing a spot to watch the fight. People coming in from other rooms craned their necks to see over the crowd. Johnny Football had a nasty uppercut and could take a punch like a pro, but it turned out Ponytail was some kind of mixed martial artist. His leg lashed out in a sweep beneath the football player's knees, and suddenly both men were on the floor, rolling around in a tangle of limbs. The music drowned out the dull, fleshy sound of punches landing. The crowd cheered. A stampede of footsteps and five enormous bodyguards came running down the stairs. Three of them worked to try to herd the crowd outside, away from the fight. Two moved in to try to get the guys off each other. Veronica didn't stick around to watch who won. It was just as she'd hoped. The upstairs hallway was almost empty. She heard predictable sounds coming from some of the bedrooms, moans, shrieks of laughter, catcalls, but the double doors she'd seen Willie go through were unguarded. She pressed her ear to one side, then she knocked. When she was sure there was no one there, she pulled the hairpin she always kept in her wallet and jammed it in the lock. Interior locks were usually pretty easy to get into. She felt the pin moving at the end of the pick. Then the door swung inward. She slid the pin into her hair, stepped in, and locked the door again behind her. She stood at the head of another long hallway, the walls painted peacock blue and wainscoted in dark, glossy wood. An end table beneath what looked like a signed and dated Picasso sketch held an enormous urn of roses in white and yellow, and stained glass sconces gave off a mild glow up and down the hall. From somewhere inside one of the rooms, she could hear a low rumble of music. She froze for a moment, straining to hear where it was coming from. She couldn't tell. Several doors stood open along the hallway. Moving as quietly as she could, she started to look around. The first door led to a bathroom, lined with shining green tile and dark slate. The drawers beneath the sink were empty, but in the medicine cabinet, there was a cornucopia of pill bottles, Dilaudid, Percocet, Oxy, and some others she didn't recognize, and an antique snuff case full of loose white powder. She carefully put everything back where she'd found it and shut the cabinet. Another door looked in on a small suite that could have come straight out of the Playboy Mansion. A huge round bed took up most of the room. Red and green neon lighting ran around the walls in abstract shapes, and a bar stood in one corner. In an adjoining room, a huge jacuzzi-style tub sat bubbling quietly, already warmed up. A set of wide French doors stood open to show a circular library beyond. Built-in wooden bookshelves lined the walls, filled with heavy leather tomes and fronted with glass. The books seemed to be actual collector's items, carefully curated. She saw Aristotle, Erasmus, Machiavelli. Someone was a classicist. Or had the money to look like one. A fire crackled in an enormous stone hearth, and the furniture was glossy and dark. She moved quickly and quietly, her high heels dangling from one hand so they wouldn't make noise on the hardwood. It wasn't until she turned the corner in the hall that she saw where the music was coming from. It streamed out of a partly open door, an ominous electronic thud. Veronica's heart hammered in her ears, asynchronous with the music's rhythm. She held her breath and crept toward the open door. It led to a den. Framed movie posters, Scarface, The Godfather, Goodfellas, hung around the walls. Track lighting generated a warm, indirect glow. A wide scarlet couch sat in front of a plasma screen TV mounted on the wall. Two men were sitting on the couch, playing a video game, their backs to the hall. One had short, shiny, dark hair. The other sprouted with wild, dirty blonde dreadlocks. The dark-haired head bent down for a moment. The smell of pot suddenly filled the air. She could hear the gurgling sound of someone taking a deep, committed hit. "I'm not complaining, man," said Willie Murphy. He talked quickly, in a lilting, urgent patter, never taking his eyes off the screen, where the burly army guy he was playing let loose a hail of bullets at an alien. "You guys are like family to me, you know? I mean, anything you want, anything I can do, I'll do." She watched as Rico Gutierrez Ortega tilted his head back and exhaled.
Anyone ever tell you you talk too much? He finally asked as his lungs cleared. Pulse throbbing in her ears, Veronica took a few steps back from the door. She pulled out her phone with shaking fingers, and then, covering the speaker with her thumb to mute it, she dialed Lamb's cell. It rang 6 times. She clutched the phone with white-knuckled hands, wondering if he'd seen her name on the caller ID and was screening her out. She didn't want to just call 911. There wasn't an emergency to report. And by the time she convinced dispatch that this was related to the missing girls, it might be too late. Just as she was about to give up, he answered.
What is it?
His voice was brusque and dismissive. She closed her eyes, mentally thanking whatever higher power had talked him into answering. Lamb, it's Veronica Mars. This afternoon, I got a lead on a suspect who was caught on camera selling Haley DeWalt's necklace 2 days after she disappeared. A small-time crook named William Murphy. Mac can get you the details. I'm at the Gutierrez mansion on Manzanita, and he's here. He's in one of the back rooms playing video games with Federico. For a moment, there was silence on the other end of the line. Back in the den, something exploded on screen. The boys both groaned loudly. Veronica waited.
So you want me to bust into private property without a warrant because someone may or may not have stolen a necklace? You're out of your mind, Mars.
She gripped the phone tighter. There's a huge party going on downstairs. I counted about 50 laws being broken. You have plenty of probable cause to get you in the door. How do you even know this guy got the necklace from Haley? How do you know? Lamb, this is your chance, she hissed, losing her temper. I can prove that Willie Murphy had a missing girl's necklace. Do you want to let that slip right through your fingers, or do you want to be the big damn hero that bags the bad guy? I don't know how long he'll be here. You have to move. He was silent for another second.
Okay, keep on him. We're coming.
Then he hung up. She made her way back around the corner. Willie was still talking.
You ever think we might all be some kind of livestock for aliens? Like maybe Earth is just a big wild game reserve and aliens come back from time to time to make sure we've got enough to eat and we're healthy enough to propagate and pick off a couple million of us for food? I saw a program on the Discovery Channel about people who think they've been, like, abducted and shit, but maybe the anal probe is, like, their version of a brand. You get the old double bar up the ass, and it's their way of marking you as theirs.
Rico laughed wildly. One of the soldiers on the screen exploded in a shower of blood, and half the screen went black, the words, "Game Over," in red. Neither one set down his controller. Both seemed to think they were playing the surviving character. The minutes crept by. She stood at the door, hoping that in the middle of one of their stoner ramblings, they'd say something about one of the girls. Any minute she expected to hear sirens, shouts through a bullhorn, the party being invaded. Willie and Rico kept jamming the buttons on their controllers, shouting whenever one of them died.
Shit, son, I fucking pwned you, Rico jeered. The controller wasn't working, it was like stuck or something.
Sure, sure, a machine gun blast, then, damn, man, I keep thinking of that little Puerto Rican girl in the pink bikini.
The one with the bangs?
No, that one with the pierced belly button.
Cute, cute, cute.
Willie laughed so hard he started to cough.
Dude, she called you a douchebag. I don't think she was that into you, man. Plus, she's here with, like, 20 girlfriends. No way we can get her alone.
No, man, look, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna go to the garage and get the Ferrari. Then we're gonna drive it around to the patio with the bass thumping. They are gonna swarm us, man. Bitches love Ferraris.
He held up his controller and jammed over and over again on one of the buttons.
Then we'll load up the honeys and take them to Taco Bell.
Taco Bell? Man, there's like smoked salmon and asparagus and truffle oil and like crudités downstairs. Why the hell do you want to go to Taco Bell?
Rico shrugged. I like their chalupas.
Willie's voice went dreamy.
Oh, yeah. Those are awesome.
Rico stood halfway up, then fell back onto the sofa, laughing hysterically.
Oh, shit, the stoners are on the move.
Willie was helping Rico to his feet. Not very quickly or efficiently, but on the move nonetheless. Time to exit.
She backed up a few steps, then turned on her heel and went back the way she'd come. If she hurried, she'd have time to duck into one of the other rooms, hide behind the door until they passed. She rounded the corner and pushed her way into the library, and right into Eduardo. Chapter 19. A short, shrill scream burst out of her throat before she could stop it. Eduardo grabbed her by the bicep, his fingers digging into her bare flesh. He dragged her farther into the library behind him.
"How the fuck did you get back here?"
Spittle flew from his mouth. She instinctively shrank away from him, but he had an iron grip on her arm. The sound of footsteps pounded along the corridor outside. Rico burst into the room, Willie on his heels.
"What's going on?"
Rico stopped in his tracks and stared. Behind him, Willie went pale, his eyes round. Eduardo shook her roughly back and forth. Her teeth clattered against one another with the impact. She gave another little cry of pain, her breath short and shaky.
"This little bitch is wandering around where she shouldn't be."
His words came in a wild cascade, tumbling in rapid fire bursts out of his mouth. He sniffed loudly.
"What the fuck, Rico? She one of yours? You can't just let people wander around this place, S.A."
He sniffed again, as if he were allergic to something in the room. Dilated pupils, runny nose, diarrhea of the mouth. Someone's been sampling the company product. Her eyes fell on an ugly gilded clock on the mantel, naked cherubs gesturing toward the face. It was just after 10:30, almost 15 minutes since she'd called Lam. Rico held up both hands.
"It wasn't me. I've never seen this chick."
He gave her an appraising look, his lids heavy.
"I'd remember."
"Eduardo, man, I think you're hurting her," Willie said, his voice uneasy.
"Why don't you let her go?" "Shut the fuck up, Willie."
Eduardo jerked Veronica close to his body, his face only inches from hers. The smooth-talking flirt of the night before was gone. This Eduardo was taut and aggressive. Tendons strained in his neck and arms, and his hair stuck up where he'd been running his fingers through it. Between that and his bulging eyes, he looked quite mad. Tears sprang to her eyes, but she didn't try to hide them. She wanted to look as defenseless, as non-threatening as possible.
"Don't you remember me? We talked the other night down by the pool. We were going to take a walk on the beach, but I was here with my boyfriend. I came back tonight to find you. I didn't mean to do anything wrong."
"You think I'm some kind of idiot?" he spat. "I want to know who you're working for."
She glanced over at Willie and Rico. She didn't know what she was hoping to see in their faces. Sympathy, maybe, or even exasperation. Instead, Willie was looking studiously away, his twitching rabbit eyes darting around the edges of the room, as if he were politely trying to not notice the way Eduardo was twisting her arm. Rico, on the other hand, grinned foolishly. He looked like he thought he was in for a treat.
"I'm really sorry," she whispered.
Her vision blurred for a moment, and a tear cut down the side of her cheek. She held very still, trying to keep her focus steady.
"I didn't mean to do anything wrong. Please just let me go, and I'll go back down to the party. I won't bother you. I'll leave if you want, and never come back."
"Hey, man, that seems fair." Willie shifted his weight. "She didn't hurt anything. Let's just take her back out front and leave her alone." "Get lost, Willie."
It was Rico who spoke this time, his voice soft and slow.
"We need some privacy."
Willie licked his lips. She caught a whiff of sweat and patchouli as he rubbed the back of his neck with one hand.
"Sure, Rico. Sure, I'll head back to the party, okay?"
He edged toward the door, slowly at first, as if he couldn't quite get his speed up. Then he disappeared down the hall. Veronica could hear a distant door open and close. And just like that, she was alone with the Gutierrez cousins. Rico turned to shut the library's double doors with a soft click. Eduardo stood stone still, his eyes boring into hers, his grip tight.
"I'm not sure what I did wrong," Veronica said feebly. "The door was open. I just came in and looked around."
"The door wasn't open, mommy."
All of a sudden, he let go of her. She staggered a few feet back, rubbing her arm as a wolfish smile spread over his face. It was a lot like the smile he'd given her just the night before on the terrace. Both times she felt hunted, but this time she felt teeth.
The door wasn't open, and we both know it. So why don't we cut the shit?
He shouted the last word and swept an armful of books off the shelf as he passed, sending them crashing to the floor. Rico walked around the other side, flanking her with an expression of stupid amusement. She took a step backward and felt one of the bookshelves pressing against her spine. Rico laughed, stopping a short distance away from her. She felt around behind her for something, anything, that she could use as a weapon, but there were only books.
Who sent you?
Eduardo's voice had escalated to a furious scream. He lunged toward her, his lips pulled back in a snarl. She flinched away from him, stumbling over a fallen book.
I don't know what you're talking about, she cried.
She looked from one to the other, truly confused. Did they know she was a PI? Did they think she was a cop?
She's not gonna make it easy, Eddie,
Rico said thickly. He grinned at her.
But she's gonna make it fun.
When she looked at Eduardo, he was reaching behind his back, fumbling at something she couldn't see. A moment later, her heart stuttered painfully in her chest. He had a knife.
Who are you with? The Sonoras? The Zetas?
Eduardo turned the blade back and forth, the firelight running along the steel in bright and shifting patterns. It was a Bowie knife, 6 inches long, and he held it up in a ready stance.
Los Caballeros Templarios?
She gaped at him, her brain on fire. He thought she was an assassin? Someone from a rival cartel? That was insane. Certifiably, beyond a doubt, insane. But he was deadly serious. A tight, panicked feeling was starting to close in on Veronica's chest, pressing down on her lungs, on her heart.
I'm not with anyone, she whispered.
She mentally took the measurements of the room around her. Rico and Eduardo flanked her, each a few feet away. Behind her were bookshelves. In front of her, a low chaise long she might be able to launch herself across. But how fast is he with that knife? He held it like he'd used it before. She wasn't sure she'd be able to make it to the door.
That's what they all say, Rico said.
He grinned, and she thought she saw a mischievous gleam in his eye.
He doesn't think I'm in a cartel, she realized. He's just egging Eduardo on because he thinks it's funny.
The thought didn't make her feel any better.
We know your people have been in town for a while now.
Eduardo's pupils were so wide she could see the room reflected in their depths. He wiped his nose quickly with the back of his left hand.
Watching, waiting for an opportunity, looking for your chance to send a message to El Oso.
Veronica wondered distantly if this is what had happened to Haley, to Aurora. If instead of discovering something, they'd simply been on the receiving end of Eduardo's paranoia and Rico's thirst for blood. She took a step sideways and bumped into a heavy pedestal with a musty dictionary perched on top.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Stop lying!
Eduardo's voice rose, a ragged cry of rage. She saw his legs tense in the split second before he sprang at her, and she took her one desperate chance, throwing her body at the chaise longue in the hopes that she could scramble over it. But a fist closed in her hair. She was jerked backward against someone's hard, heaving chest. The knife flashed against her throat.
Tell me who sent you.
Eduardo's breath was hot against her cheek.
No one!
Her scalp burned. She writhed in his grip, struggling to twist out of his grasp, but he had her pinned. She felt the edge of the blade pressing into her flesh. A thin ribbon of blood trickled down her throat.
Tell me.
She didn't answer. She closed her eyes and waited for the pain. Then an explosion of noise blasted through the room. The French doors burst. A group of girls poured through, laughing and jostling. At the head of the crowd was Willie Murphy, looking like he was leading a marching band as he gestured for the crowd to follow him. Absurdly, bringing up the rear was Dick Casablancas, plastic cup in hand. The sound of music drifted down the hallway and filled the room.
This way, ladies, there's more Cristal in here.
Willie opened a bottle of champagne with a loud pop. Behind him, the group cheered. He gestured at a buxom black-haired girl in a bright pink bikini.
Rico, man, look who I found. Selena here is totes down with our Taco Bell plan, brah.
Eduardo's grip on her loosened, the knife flashing away out of sight of the crowd. The moment she was free, Veronica staggered toward Dick.
Dick, baby, where have you been? I've been looking all over for you.
He tried to take an instinctive step backward as she advanced, but she was already flinging her arms around his neck and pulling him toward her. She showered him with kisses, and as she leaned up to plant one firmly on his lips, she caught a glimpse of his sea-blue eyes, frozen wide in a kind of mesmerized horror. But Eduardo wasn't even looking at her and Dick. He had eyes for no one but Willie. For just a moment, she caught sight of Willie's face. His complexion was like curdled milk, his eyes wide and darting, his hands trembled so bad he could barely pour the champagne. He looked almost as scared as Veronica felt. A few of the bodyguards burst in, looking abashed, trying, and failing, to herd everyone back down the hall to the main floor. Girls climbed up on the antique chairs, gyrating their hips to the music pouring in from the other room. An inflatable beach ball had manifested from somewhere and floated through the room from fist to fist. Rico was already chatting up a little cluster of girls, easily distracted from bloodshed to booty. Then another kind of noise filled the hallway.
Attention! Attention! Evacuate the premises immediately! This is an order! I repeat, this is an order!
Bullhorns. Mechanical, blaring voices. Cops. All hell broke loose. At once, the spring breakers flew into motion, some running straight for the door, some rooted to the spot in confusion and fear. Dick released Veronica, looking baffled. She saw Eduardo stepping back with his hands up and a resigned expression on his face. Rico scowled, annoyed, as the little group of girls scattered. Willie Murphy, though, reacted with the knee-jerk panic of a man who'd been hunted half his life. He ran toward the door in blind terror. He sidestepped a brutish-looking deputy in khaki, only to be headed off by another, this one with a baton swinging in his fist. Then he scrambled backward, eyes rolling like a cornered animal. Veronica saw the familiar white flash of a taser, and Willie hit the ground hard. Suddenly, Lamb was there, bullhorn in hand. His voice screeched painfully through the room, echoing off the glossy furniture. Several of the remaining spring breakers covered their ears, cringing.
"Clear this room! Clear it out, people! This is your last warning, or we'll bring in the tear gas! Out to the front lawn, where our friendly officers will meet and process you! Go on!"
A few feet away, one of the officers was getting Murphy's wrists in cuffs.
"Willie Murphy, you are under arrest. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have the right to an attorney. If you cannot afford an attorney, one will be provided for you. Do you understand the rights I have just read to you?"
Lamb took the bullhorn away from his lips, leaning in to talk to Eduardo, who nodded slowly at whatever he said. A surge of anger propelled Veronica forward, her eyes blazing. Lamb's eyes narrowed when he saw her.
"Mars. Going in guns blazing as usual, I see. You should have let us handle this."
She jabbed an index finger toward Eduardo.
"This asshole had a knife to my throat, Lamb. I want to press charges."
Lamb glanced at Eduardo, then put a firm hand on her back to propel her out the door.
"Come on, Mars. This has been a crazy night for you. Let's not say anything we'll regret later."
She shook him off.
"Are you kidding me? He assaulted me. He drew blood. Do your fucking job for once and arrest him."
Eduardo quickly stepped forward, giving Lamb an abashed look.
"Sheriff, I did do as this girl said. Mars, you said her name was? I overreacted. I found her in my private rooms and thought she was an intruder. I did not know she was a friend of yours."
Veronica's mouth fell open, but Lamb just smirked.
"I told you not to go sneaking around people's houses, Buttercup. Hell, I could actually take you in for trespassing right now, you know that?"
"There's no need for that," said Eduardo benevolently.
It was an honest mistake. He gave a little bow toward Veronica, a mocking smile playing at the edges of his lips. She stared at the two of them, standing close together now, talking in low voices about Willie Murphy. Willie Murphy, the low-hanging fruit that would be enough to get the press off Lamb's back without requiring any real police work, and without requiring him to piss off the cartel. Then she swallowed it. The rage, the fear. It went down hard. It made a knot in the pit of her stomach. She didn't speak, but let an officer lead her out the door and down the stairs, toward the clean, cool air outside.
Chapter 20. Look, I'm telling you, I'm fine. I don't need a sedative. It was almost 3 a.m, and Veronica sat at the edge of the hospital bed, a plaid blanket tucked around her shoulders. She wore a set of light blue scrubs, 3 sizes too big. She'd still been in her bikini when she'd arrived at the ER waiting room 1.5 hours ago, shivering and exposed. Now she held up her hands to ward off the tiny Dixie cup the nurse was trying to hand her and accidentally knocked it to the floor. 2 blue pills scattered across the scuffed linoleum. The nurse, a short, plump man with a buzz cut and glasses perched on the edge of his nose, gave her a stern, "What did I tell you?" look before stooping to scoop them back up. "You don't, huh? Except for the fact that you're shaking like a leaf." Back at the mansion, the EMTs had taken one look at her neck and insisted on taking her straight to Neptune General. Once the doctor had swabbed the blood away, the cut turned out to be shallow, only about 3 centimeters long, but they'd had her lie still for a while so they could monitor any possible shock. "Sorry," she muttered. "My friend's on his way to pick me up. I'll be okay then." On the other side of the thin cotton curtain around her bed, she heard the sound of someone violently puking into a bin. The ER was full of gray-faced undergraduates, most of them with alcohol poisoning. The nurse sighed heavily, gave her one last argumentative look, and turned to go check on her neighbor. Veronica pulled the blanket tighter around her shoulders, relieved to be alone. The nurse was right. It wasn't just the chill air that made her shiver. All the adrenaline of the last few hours had curdled in her blood, leaving her weak-limbed and nauseated. Her arm ached where Eduardo had grabbed her, and 6 dull, throbbing pains were blooming across her body from the struggle. And then there was the thin line across her throat, still burning from the touch of that blade. Superficial as the wound was, she felt it most of all. But she didn't want to take any pills that would make her slow or stupid. Not yet. Not while she might still have to think on her feet. The curtain fluttered open. A second nurse put her head through. "Miss Mars, your friend's arrived. He's in the waiting room whenever you're ready to go." She jumped off the bed.
"Okay, thank you."
Wallace stood in the lime-green waiting room, wearing a pair of baggy sweats and a t-shirt. Her call had obviously woken him up. He was sleep-rumpled, but his warm brown eyes were alert. He was pretending to read a poster about proper hand-washing when she came in the room, but he looked up with a gentle, concerned expression, taking in her scrubs, her tangled hair, and the dark red scratch on her neck. She paused in the doorway. Then, all at once, her lips started to shudder, and she burst into tears. It was a sudden storm, coming on without warning and gone almost as soon as it had started. Wallace pulled her against his side in a rough hug and didn't speak. They stood there for a few minutes, him patting her shaking shoulder. Finally, she wiped her eyes frantically, embarrassed, unable to speak. Then she laughed shakily.
"Let's get out of here, okay?"
"Yeah, okay." He squeezed her shoulder and then let go. The streets were still busy even at 3 a.m. Most of the bars kept extended hours during spring break, and they passed a few, fluttering with light. An ambulance streaked in the opposite direction, back toward the hospital. She leaned her head back against the seat and looked over at Wallace.
"Thanks for coming to get me," she said.
"Dad's not cleared to drive yet."
"It's no problem," Wallace said. "You gonna tell me what happened?"
She watched his knuckles tighten around the steering wheel as she told him about the night, how she'd gone back to the party to find Willie Murphy, how she'd gotten caught sneaking around the upstairs rooms.